Stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to welcome you to the final meeting of the 2016 calendar year. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Mr. Scala?
Here.
Mr. Thomas?
Here.
Ms. Nauzer?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Mr. Treese?
Present.
Mr. Ruffin?
Here.
And approval of the minutes from the November 21st meeting, is that correct?
Correct.
Has anyone had a chance to review the minutes? Is there a motion to approve the minutes as distributed?
So moved.
Second.
Gentleman from Trapp, seconded by Mr. Scala. Any discussion on the minutes? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Seeing none, minutes are approved. Are there any adjustments to the agenda? Mr. Trapp.
Yes, Mayor, I would like to abstain from R-179-16 because of a conflict.
I would make a motion to allow Mr. Trapp to abstain from R-179-16. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you for your disclosure. And Mr. Thomas.
Yeah, could you move B-331-16 from the consent agenda and put it on old business, please?
With no objection, that will be moved to old business. Any further adjustments to the agenda?
Move the agenda as amended.
Mr. Scala's moved that the agenda as amended be adopted, seconded by?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Ruffin. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 The amendment is adopted. We have a special item today is Judge Auger. And Linda, would you like to come up as well? It's not often that I have a judge appearing in front of me instead of the other way around.
Okay, I'm gonna stick with it. We promised we're going.
I just have to say a few words about Judge Auger. Shortly after I was sworn in as mayor, he invited me to come over to the courtroom, and I was impressed with Judge Auger's philosophy of municipal courts. And this community can be very proud that we have someone with his courtroom experience as a former prosecutor, but with the passion and compassion of a counselor. And when he explained to me his philosophy of the municipal court as our community's neighborhood courts, I was really struck by how fortunate we were. And you have to keep in mind, this was after the events in Ferguson, Missouri, that led to the disparities in our municipal justice system and the pent-up concern that St. Louis was experiencing there. And here in Columbia, he had been developing this system of justice. And he explained to me that for many people, their entrance into the municipal court is probably their first interaction with the justice system, and hopefully their last interaction with that justice system. And how they're treated in that courtroom probably influences to a great degree whether they go home and clean up their backyard, or clean up their relationship with their neighbor, or clean up their own life, or whether they proceed to more serious charges at the circuit court level. And for him to exercise the values and expectations of our community without being punitive in a way that could nurture and nudge that defendant into the behavior that we all expect from people in our community was refreshing. And it was no surprise that as I would get monthly and quarterly reports, not just from his staff at the municipal court level, but from our own Office of State Courts Administrator, that Columbia consistently ranked high as one of the best municipal courts in the state. And when the Supreme Court came out in September with their minimum operating standards for municipal courts in the state of Missouri, the based on some of the recommendations from the Ferguson Commission, Columbia was already doing those things. And we already had an independent judiciary that was not an ATM machine for municipal court fines, but a way that encouraged the behavior that we all want from our friends and neighbors. And so I was disappointed when you announced that you were going to retire. And he made very clear that his last day was no later than January 10th, and that he would not be back under any circumstances. And, you know, it's rare that the council joins together in presenting these resolutions of appreciation, but I'm happy to share with you today our thoughts that whereas Robert Auger began his employment with the City of Columbia on May 19th, 2003, as an associate municipal judge, and was hired as the acting municipal judge on August 4th, 2003, and as the municipal judge on October 27th, 2003. And whereas Judge Auger will retire from employment with the City of Columbia on January 11th, 2017, after over 13 years of dedicated and honorable service to the benefit of all of Columbia's citizens. And whereas Judge Auger has maintained the highest standards of professionalism and personal conduct, and whereas it is the desire of the mayor and council to recognize and thank Judge Auger for his outstanding public service in assistance to this and former city council. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the city council extends its heartfelt thanks to Judge Auger for his dedicated public service and his commitment to keeping Columbia a viable city. We wish Judge Auger much joy, happiness, and good health in his retirement, in witness whereof we have hereunto set our hands and caused to be affixed hereto the seal of the City of Columbia this 19th day of December 2016. Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations. Trial lawyer for many, many years before taking the bench, both as a prosecutor and a defense attorney. And lawyers who do trial work, as much as I did, are never supposed to be at a loss of words. We are supposed to be able to argue pretty much anything. And I'm overwhelmed and appreciative of the kindness and the nice things that have been done by those here tonight. I want to thank the mayor, the council, each of you for this lovely honor. I want to thank my fellow council employees, Sheila Amin and Mike Mathis, for all of the help over the years in fulfilling this job. I want to thank all of the prior mayors and councilmen who have sat where you are today and who have been supportive of the court as I have faced you for budget and reappointment many times. I've always appreciated the confidence that you placed in my abilities. I hope that I have lived up to that confidence, and I appreciate this gesture on your behalf and the behalf of mayors and councils from the past. Now I'm going to turn around, if you don't mind if I turn my back on you for just a second. In the back of the courtroom are some very special people, and those are the people of the municipal court. They have come out here today to witness this on a very cold December when I'm sure they have a lot better things to do than sitting here listening to this. But I can tell you that I have been fortunate over the years to have the absolute best municipal court clerk's office anywhere in the state, bar none. And that is not just my opinion, but that is the opinion of many of their peers. Would you all please stand up and be recognized? And the last thing I'd like to say is I would like to thank my wife, Linda. You know? When you take this job, you don't really understand. I saw Kevin all come in, so sorry to tell you this, but you don't really understand how much of the worry and the thought process goes on after you leave that day at work. You don't just turn off your mind as you contemplate whether somebody's going to get bond or somebody's going to get to jail or somebody's going to go to jail. Or there's so many decisions that make so many differences in people's lives, and sometimes it helps to have a supportive staff. And it certainly helps to have a supportive spouse who you can
go home and she's going to like you whether you do it the right way or not. You know? Whether your decision is a good one or a bad one. But it's always been helpful, and thank you so much for always being there for me. And late night calls that come in at 3 in the morning, I don't think either one of us will miss those.
We're done. Yeah,
another thing about my job that not a lot of people know is it's much a 24/7 job as far as being all the time. So thank you also for being here. You know, thank you for this honor. Thank you, CPD. UMPD was at my reception this afternoon. Thanks for all the police agencies who have worked hard to present cases. Thanks to the defense bar, who has done their job in representing the defendants who come before. All I have to say, I wish you each and everyone a Merry Christmas. Thank you again.
Thank you. I will, just as an aside, Judge, just compliment you again for your stewardship, not just of our municipal court system, but of our municipal court building. I will share with the audience what I shared with you, that when I was on the Historic Preservation Commission, we did these walking tours on Saturday, and one of them includes some of the artwork in downtown Columbia. If you haven't been to our municipal court, there are some fantastic murals done during the WPA administration by Sidney Larson. Is that correct? The court's building was locked on Saturday morning, and Judge Auger came in on his day off and interpreted those murals in a way that only a judge who has sat there every day and looked at each individual face as to the history of Columbia as embodied in those murals could do. And he was such a good interpreter and such a good narrator and preservationist of that history that I hope you convey that to your successor, and that that he will be as good a steward as you have been to that building and its gentrification and asset, because I think it is an august courtroom, and the murals only enhance the expectations of our community on the people that come into that room. So thank you very much. Next order of business will be appointments to boards and commissions. There are several opportunities to volunteer and serve the City of Columbia. Our first vacancy is on the Building and Construction Codes Commission. There is a number of vacancies, which we will re-advertise. What is the final disposition of these? I mean, we have retooled some of these building construction codes. Will this continue to be active?
Yes.
BCCC, yes.
Yes.
Okay, very good. So we will re-advertise the energy conservation positions and the landlord. For the master plumber, we have alternate position. We have one applicant. Without objection, can we appoint him by acclamation?
Sure.
Seeing none. On the City of Columbia New Century Fund, I serve on that commission. There's one vacancy, and we have one applicant. Again, without objection, may we appoint that applicant?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Columbia Vision Commission, the Commission on Cultural Affairs, both have vacancies, which we will re-advertise. Disabilities Commission, we have one applicant. Without objection, may we appoint John Bowders to that?
Sure.
Seeing none, so approved. On the Finance Advisory and Audit Committee, we have three vacancies and three applicants. And I tell you, I've had a couple conversations with folks on this commission. I would like for this committee to be a little more robust than it's been in the past. And I would probably prefer that we hold off on this, maybe re-advertise those positions. And I'd like to have a chance to meet with them just to make sure that they're willing to meet a little more regularly than that commission has in the past. That Finance Advisory and Audit Committee looks at our business policies, investment policies, audit policies. I think we would benefit from just having a little more interaction with them. Mr. Scala.
I agree with you, Mr. Mayor. I think that this commission is becoming an emerging. There has been some discussions, and it's an emerging commission. With the scrutiny that we duly give the budget process and so on, I think we owe it to the community, certainly, to make this as robust a group as possible, not just a review body, but one that actively makes recommendations. And in that regard, I would like to see a little bit more competition and have an opportunity to chat with some of the folks to make sure that we're headed in the right direction. So I support you.
Seeing none, Madam Clerk, if you would re-advertise that. Firefighters Retirement Board, we have one vacancy and one applicant without objection. So moved. On the Human Services Commission, we have three vacancies and a number of applicants, including the three up for renewal. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll for the term? I guess they're all in term ending the same.
Okay. Mr. Trapp?
Amy Camp.
Mr. Scala?
Amy Camp.
Mr. Thomas?
Amy Camp.
Ms. Nauser?
Amy Camp.
Ms. Peters?
Cookie McCrary.
Mr. Treese?
Mark Jones.
Mr. Ruffin?
Amy Camp.
And for the second vacancy?
Mr. Trapp?
Tanya Compton.
Mr. Scala?
Mark Jones.
Mr. Thomas?
Brian Jones.
Ms. Nauser?
Mark Jones.
Ms. Peters?
Cookie McCrary.
Mr. Treese?
Tanya Compton.
Mr. Ruffin?
Tanya Compton.
We'll have to do that again.
Would you call the roll again?
Mr. Scala?
Mark Jones.
Mr. Thomas?
Kathleen Darchuk.
Ms. Nauser?
Mark Jones.
Ms. Peters?
Mark Jones.
Mr. Treese?
Mark Jones.
Mr. Ruffin?
Tanya Compton.
Mr. Trapp?
Mark Jones.
So having achieved a majority there, would you call the vacancy for the third vacancy? Or call the roll for the third vacancy?
Mr. Trapp?
Tanya Compton.
Mr. Scala?
Tanya Compton.
Mr. Thomas?
Brian Jones.
Ms. Nauser?
Tanya Compton.
Ms. Peters?
Cookie McCrary.
Mr. Treese?
Tanya Compton.
Mr. Ruffin?
Tanya Compton.
Get four on that?
Yes.
Thank you. For the Mayor's Council on Physical Fitness, we have one vacancy and two applicants. Madam Clerk, could you call the roll?
Mr. Trapp?
I thought that was a mayoral appointment.
But I was thinking too.
Sorry.
It's the entire council.
Okay.
Laura O'Neill.
Mr. Scala?
Tyler Lero.
Mr. Thomas?
Laura O'Neill.
Ms. Nauser?
Tyler Lero.
Ms. Peters?
Tyler Lero.
Mr. Trees?
Laura O'Neill.
Mr. Ruffin?
Laura O'Neill.
Police Retirement Board, there's one vacancy and one applicant without objection. Let's reappoint Benjamin Freed. For the Water and Light Advisory Board, we have one vacancy and a number of applicants. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Trapp?
Brandon Fines.
Mr. Scala?
Diane Schuler.
Mr. Thomas?
Kim Fallis.
Ms. Nauser?
Kim Fallis.
Ms. Peters?
Diane Schuler.
Treese?
Kim Fallis.
Mr. Ruffin?
Kim Fallis.
Four?
Yes.
Thank you very much, and congratulations. For the Youth Advisory Council, we have two vacancies and three applicants. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Mr. Trapp?
Jared Lovelace.
Mr. Scala?
Jared Lovelace.
Mr. Thomas?
Alex Geyer.
Ms. Nauser?
Alex Geyer.
Ms. Peters?
Jared Lovelace.
Mr. Treese?
Jared Lovelace.
Mr. Ruffin?
Jared Lovelace.
You get four?
Yes.
And for the next slot, please.
Mr. Trapp?
Alex Geyer.
Mr. Scala?
Elliot Bones.
Mr. Thomas?
Alex Geyer.
Ms. Nauser?
Alex Geyer.
Ms. Peters?
Alex Geyer.
Mr. Treese?
Alex Geyer, please.
Mr. Ruffin?
Alex Geyer.
Thank you very much, and there will be another opportunity to apply for board and commissions again in January. We have no scheduled public comment at this point. Next order of business will be public hearings. Madam Clerk, would you read public hearing 42-16?
And should I read the resolution with it?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, in tandem with R181-16.
Public hearing 4216 is the consideration of an amendment to the 2015-2019 Consolidated Plan and FY 2016 Annual Action Plan for CDBG and Home Funds establishing a comment period. Council Bill 181-16 is a resolution approving an amendment to the 2015-2019 Consolidated Plan and FY 2016 Annual Action Plan for CDBG and Home Funds and authorizing the city manager to submit the document to the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Is there a staff report? Mr. Teddy.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, everyone. Council action tonight on this resolution would approve two amendments to a planning document, the annual action plan for fiscal year 2016, which refers to the Department of Housing and Urban Development fiscal year, which is the calendar year that we're in, and it's money that's been made available to us for expenditure beginning in this year. And your action tonight would approve two amendments to that plan, which was originally approved back in April of last year. The first of these would move a sum of $5,230 from one agency to another. In other words, it's surplus funds for one agency, Boone County Family Resources, and two, Central Latino, which can make use of those funds with an activity that's in progress. And then the second of those amendments, and I should say that first amendment concerns community development block grant funds, the formula funds that we get for various community building purposes. And then the second amendment concerns a so-called Community Housing Development Organization set-aside funding, pronounced CHODO, the acronym. And these are housing development organizations that are local that are engaged in the production of affordable housing. And we are under a mandate to spend 15% minimum of our home investment partnerships formula grant through their activities. So that's why we call it the 15% CHODO set-aside. That equals $67,000 in funds for fiscal year 2016. And this year, the staff ran for the first time what we're calling a non-competitive process, which means we met with the qualified CHDO organizations, and there is a pre-qualification. This is not a wide-open process. And they agreed, and our Community Development Commission agreed to fund them basically on an equal basis. They're each to build a single affordable home. And as you can see from the chart at the bottom of this slide, nearly equal shares. The reason the 105 Lynn house is less is that's a smaller house, both in square feet and also in amenities. It'll be a two-bedroom, one-bath home. The others will be three-bedroom, two-bath homes. And the other two agencies besides community, CMCA, are Job Point and Habitat. And Job Point would be building 107 Lynn, and Habitat would be building 115 Lynn. And this is another step in the development of the Community Land Trust. That is the plan for the ownership of the property, is to donate it initially to these agencies to build the homes, and then by agreement there'd be a donation back to the Community Land Trust, which the council has formed and has appointed a governing board. And just to share with you again the detail on the reallocation of the CDBG, again it's $5,320 from a Boone County Family Resources project that is on Apple Tree Lane in South Central Columbia. They came in under budget on that project, and staff has identified Central Latino as an agency that would benefit from the additional funding, so they've recommended to the Community Development Commission, who now recommends to you that the funding go to that agency, and this would be to upgrade a retaining wall that's part of their ongoing exterior renovations to the building that's on Garth. They had identified some additional costs. It'll result in a 5-foot rather than a 4-foot retaining wall. And the staff have included a photograph to show that work in progress. There's some additional renovations to the exterior of their building, which has been in service now for a number of years. That concludes my report. I'll try to answer any questions you have.
So the Community Land Trust, when is their first meeting? We just appointed that at the last meeting. Their first meeting's coming.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I believe we're working with the date of January 10. I'm not certain if that's tentative or if that's a firm date, but January 10 is the date I've seen for the first meeting of that board.
And I probably should have done this during boards and commissions, but we had discussed a council liaison at least during the first year of that Community Land Trust. Mr. Trapp has worked with that Homeless Initiative, Homeless Summit, the Community Land Trust consultant. Would you be willing to be that liaison?
I would, very much so.
And is there any objection or anybody else that would like to do that? Thank you. If that's adequate for your direction, and I appreciate your stewardship of that, especially at this infant moment with this group, because I think it could be catalytic for homeless and affordable housing opportunities in Columbia. I appreciate that. Any other questions of staff with this amendment? None. Is there anyone from the public that would like to be heard on the amendment to the Consolidated Plan and Annual Action Plan for CDBG and home funds and CHOTO funds? Seeing none, thank you very much. Any additional discussion?
I'll just make some brief comments. Both these changes are good. It shows, you know, someone coming in under budget and then having those funds be made available. The Centro Latino, if you're not familiar with it, it's right near the Lynn Street, and that whole area has had a renaissance of really city-stimulated redevelopment. There's also been some private development in the area. And then shifting one of the houses' size to a smaller unit as a response to feedback, and again, all of the organizations came together and agreed upon an equitable distribution of the housing subsidy. So this seems like a good amendment as part of a good plan.
Any additional comments?
Yeah, I'll just thank city staff for stewarding a long-term process here designed to increase affordable housing. I think the land trust establishment has gone really very well indeed. I understand Michael Brown will be here at the time of that first land trust board meeting, January the 10th and the 11th, to continue to advise us. And I also understand that the next target properties for the land trust are the land on Rangeline or North 8th Street, I think, that was previously earmarked for a homeless day center, which didn't come off. So I think that's exciting that we're already thinking ahead to the next piece of land. Well done.
Seeing nothing further, Madam Clerk, would you call the roll on R-181-16?
Council Bill 181-16, Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nowser?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Next order of business would be 178-16, Madam Clerk.
Council Bill 178-16 is a policy resolution adopting a Vision Zero policy and setting a goal of eliminating traffic deaths and serious injuries in Columbia by 2030.
Very good. Do we have a staff report, or Mr. Thomas, would you like to walk us, anyone?
Yeah, sure. What are you suggesting me? Okay. So the history of this, behind this resolution, this policy resolution, late 2014-15, there was a spate of pedestrian deaths and serious injuries that led to the mayor at the time, Mayor McDavid, establishing a pedestrian safety task force to study those crashes, to consist of a range of different stakeholders from engineering, law enforcement, different institutions in the community, and stakeholder groups. And come up with recommendations to improve safety for pedestrians in Columbia. Over the 9 or 10 months that the group met, the scope expanded somewhat to consider the whole initiative of traffic safety. We received presentations about a strategy that a number of other cities in the United States have adopted in recent years, a data-driven strategy called Vision Zero, the first step of which is to assert that we want to see zero deaths and serious injuries on our roadways at some point in the future. And when communities have made that resolution, And then designed strategies to accomplish it, strategies in the areas of education and enforcement and engineering. They have been remarkably successful. And in the first year, New York City cut its traffic crashes, serious traffic crashes, by something like 20%, and pedestrian-involved crashes by more like 30 or 40%. Other cities have adopted the policy and been very successful with it. So this became the task force's first recommendation, and the rest of the report focused on a number of, I think, 15 possible strategies that could be part of a Vision Zero overall program. So we present that to you now. I do believe we have an amendment to address for the wording, so we should probably deal with that first.
So one of the concerns I had was if we're asking the city manager to come back and present his recommendations for what this policy looked like, I didn't want Exhibit A to be so conscriptive that his policy had to include every item or had to be consistent with, so I would like to offer an amendment to strike that as consistent with the words which may include the guidelines, just to give him the flexibility to figure out how does this fit with competing priorities, how does it fit in limited budget resources, limited fiscal resources associated with this. I'd be happy to answer any questions if there's I would make that motion if anyone wants to second that.
I'll second it.
Thank you. By Mr. Thomas. Any discussion on the amendment?
Could you review? We're talking Exhibit A.
Yep. So the amendment sheet is attached to the electronic agenda, but currently the language is: City Council hereby directs City Manager to review final report and design a Vision Zero implementation plan that is consistent with the guidelines attached to marked Exhibit A. Exhibit A includes, you know, new FTEs, 1% texting ban, some of which may be preempted at the state level. I don't know if we can adopt a texting ban. Maybe we can, maybe we can't. I just thought it may be better, instead of locking him into those, all of those bullet points, that we use language like which may include the guidelines attached.
Okay, so that just reaffirms what it says here in Exhibit A, which bullet points are intended to be suggestions.
Correct.
So that just
doubles it.
Iterates that, doubles that. Thank you. Okay.
Mayor?
Yes.
If I may, I think you would also want to change the word should at the top of Exhibit A to may as well. So it would read: the Vision Zero implementation plan may include the following components, as opposed to should include the following components. That would be consistent with your amendment.
Any objection?
I'm not really objecting, but the thought was that the components should all be there, but the bulleted suggestions under each component were just suggestions. But I'm happy with whatever form of words you prefer.
I would probably agree with counselor's advice. But you seconded the amendment. Are you comfortable with that?
I'm comfortable with adding that.
Okay,
piece
thank
to
you.
The amendment. Sure.
Thank you.
Are we going to vote on the amendment after we take public comment, or?
We can leave the amendment pending if you want.
That was often our previous practice.
That'd be fine.
Amendments to comment on them.
That'd be fine. Any other discussion on the amendment or the underlying?
I have a question.
Yep, Mr. Trapp.
For the city manager. April 30th, 2017, is that a deadline that is realistic and doable with the other demands in the city?
Yes, I'll get it done. And, you know, I have a lot of help, and so I'll rely on others, and we have a little bit of talent, a little bit of untapped talent left in our quiver, so to speak, so I can't take many more lists of task force recommendations, but by April 30 I can do this.
Thank you, Mike.
Is there anyone from the public that desires to be heard on the Vision Zero policy? Ms. Triplett, welcome.
My name is Annette Triplett. I'm the Executive Director of PedNet Coalition 201 West Broadway. For the last 17 years, PedNet has advocated for safe streets for everyone. While we focus on the most basic forms of transportation, walking, biking, using a wheelchair, public transit, our work benefits everyone, regardless of what form of transportation you choose. Policies that make it safer for people to use active forms of transportation also make it safer for people who choose to drive a car. The one policy that has proven to be the most effective at improving road safety for everyone is the policy that you have before you tonight, Vision Zero. On behalf of PedNet Coalition and the 6,600 members we represent, I strongly urge you to vote in favor of this Vision Zero policy. I'm sorry, may I have 5 minutes for representing an organization?
I'm fine with that. Thank you.
It'll only be 4.5, I promise. Vision Zero is a policy goal and data-driven strategy to achieve zero traffic fatalities or serious injuries across all forms of road transportation. At the broadest level, Vision Zero is a philosophy of how to approach road transportation, traffic enforcement, and transportation culture. But Vision Zero becomes actionable through the adoption of a data-driven strategy of how to achieve the goal of zero. Vision Zero is comprehensive in that it considers all road users, people walking, biking, using a wheelchair, public transit, and of course driving. Vision Zero has us consider how these users interact and prioritizes the safety of vulnerable road users, like people walking, biking, or using a wheelchair, because by definition they are the most vulnerable. They are the most likely to be killed or injured if there is a crash. Vision Zero is based on the principles of safety, ethics, and responsibility. First of all, safety should be our number one priority. Vision Zero encourages us to prioritize safety over convenience. Secondly, crashes that result in deaths and serious injuries are both preventable and ethically unacceptable. And thirdly, Vision Zero places the responsibility for safety primarily on the system design, because street design can encourage either safe or dangerous behaviors. While we may never completely eliminate crashes, we can prevent crashes from leading to serious injury or death. Speed is the factor that most determines whether or not a crash will result in a death or serious injury, especially for vulnerable road users. As the speed of the vehicle increases, the risk of a fatality increases exponentially. The higher speed fatality, therefore, is entirely preventable by simply reducing the speed of the vehicle. Vision Zero originated in Sweden, where it was adopted as a national policy goal in 1997. Over the course of 20 years, Sweden has experienced a 73% reduction in road fatalities. And in the last 5 years alone, Sweden has seen a 50% reduction in pedestrian fatalities. Because of the successes in Sweden, Vision Zero is gaining serious traction in the U.S. In the last 2 years alone, Vision Zero policies have passed in 21 cities. In 2014, New York City was the first U.S. city to adopt a Vision Zero policy, and within 2 years achieved the lowest number of traffic fatalities in New York City since record-keeping began in 1910, both for overall fatalities and for pedestrian fatalities. Columbia is lagging behind other cities that are prioritizing transportation safety. Traffic crashes are one of the leading causes of death in Missouri, and in Columbia, our per capita fatality rate is twice as high as New York City, Seattle, San Francisco, and Ann Arbor. Vision Zero is a proven approach to preventing these deaths from happening. However, a Vision Zero policy is only as strong as its implementation plan. Left on a shelf, the Vision Zero policy will of itself do nothing. But by using data-driven strategies that address the cause of our crashes, we can make change. The success of other Vision Zero cities has been the result of using proven strategies, such as reducing dangerous speeding, redesigning high-risk streets, and transportation safety marketing campaigns. We look forward to working with the city manager and city staff to develop this implementation plan. Public safety is the first responsibility of government. You have the opportunity to move Columbia a major step forward towards saving lives and preventing life-changing injuries. Just like with adopting Complete Streets in 2004, Columbia can once again be a leading city in safe transportation policy. Columbia would be the 22nd city in the country to adopt Vision Zero, as well as one of the first cities in the Midwest and one of the first small cities. I urge you to vote for Vision Zero and ensure Columbia has safe streets for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Triplett? Thank you very much. Any additional public testimony? Good evening. Welcome back.
Thank you. Am I in the right position?
Yep. Yes.
Yep. Okay. Lay down. Okay. I lost the ability to drive about 10 years ago. Actually, I believe I could probably still drive, just not very well. I'm waiting for that Google car, honestly. But I walk everywhere. Tonight, actually, I was lucky enough that I was halfway here from my apartment and a friend picked me up. But in general, I walk everywhere. Even when I take the bus, I have to walk a ways to get, say I want to go to the Arc. I mean, I have to walk through parking lots and such to get over to where the Arc is. I mean, so wherever I go, I have to walk. And there's a lot of other folks in our city like me. So there's people that choose to walk because it's healthy and a great source of exercise. But then there's people like me and a lot of folks that weren't able to be here tonight because it's hard to get around when it's icy and slick outside. Maybe they aren't able to get here. That people that have disabilities that can't drive. And as Annette said, the main job of a city, or one of the main jobs, is to keep its residents safe, protected, healthy, taken care of. And there's so much evidence that Vision Zero works. Simple things like lowering the speed limit, sometimes between 5 and 10 miles an hour to 30 or less, that can keep people from just being injured when they get hit versus dying. We could save so many lives by implementing Vision Zero, not just passing it, but really taking seriously the recommendations that were turned in. And I know that I would really like to feel safer when I'm walking around and trying to live and work and play in the city. And there's a lot of other people that would as well. So I certainly urge you to pass Vision Zero.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time this evening. Welcome and good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council persons, City Manager Mathis. My name is Cheryl Price. I live at 511 Parkade Boulevard. I am the current chairperson of the Public Transit Advisory Commission, or PTAC, as we're affectionately known. The PTAC had two members appointed to the mayor's pedestrian safety task force. We also had a number of members that attended every meeting anyway, and two or three that served on different subcommittees. This was a very important task force for us. And when everything was over and done with, the PTAC as a whole voted unanimously to support this resolution. The safety of our citizens, as Gretchen and Annette both said, is one of the most important things that our city should be doing. We are currently in the process also of doing a bus service evaluation, and the main goal that we have with that is to design safe routes and safe bus stops such that we reduce the number of errors as much as possible. I'd also like to put a face on Vision Zero for you. As some of you know, I'm a survivor of a traumatic brain injury, though mine was from a fall when I was working as a nurse at the VA. As a result of not being able to go back to my career path as a nurse, I decided to volunteer my time assisting other survivors of brain injury and their families. There were so many nights I have etched in my brain that I sat with families in the intensive care unit as their loved one was being brought up from downstairs, hopefully in surgery, and would come out, hopefully. And so many times when I listened to the doctor say, sorry, they didn't make it. Most of these were a result of traffic crashes, whether it was impaired drivers, impaired driving in general, bad roads, whatever. This happened so many times, I can't even count them anymore. In the process of my volunteer work with the Brain Injury Association over the last 25 years, I have worked with more than 300 families, survivors and families. And we're getting to a point where people are now surviving. Sometimes that's good, they tell me, and sometimes it's bad, some of the survivors tell me. Many have gotten millions of dollars in settlements, but don't have enough money to support their life for their entire lifetime. That is a sad, sad story, and a sad thing to listen to, and a sad thing to try and fix. But we have a chance to fix the underlying problem by adopting the Vision Zero resolution. And I urge all of you tonight to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Price.
Owen Miller, 705 East Rock Creek Drive, the incoming president of PEDNET Coalition. And I want to talk about a time when Vision Zero would have been just a really great thing and how it would have helped to kind of put a picture to it. So we have a bike brigade of kids that would ride their bikes, starting basically from the ARC area, the kids would converge, and then we would ride them over to Smithton Middle School. And to cross to Smithton Middle School, we would cross at Ashen Stadium, which a lot of people would be like, oh my, how terrifying to take those children through Ashen Stadium. Actually, no, that was not the problem intersection. That one had a light, it was controlled, it was long enough to get us through. Our next intersection was Ash and Fairview. And if you remember Ash and Fairview, before recently, there was no control there. It was a four-way stop, or it was a two-way stop, only came at Ash. Traffic just went through Fairview. We crossed that intersection twice a day, every day, rain, shine, snow, whatever, with a dozen children. And we did it every day. So poor Richard Stone, he would see me out in public, and he would almost hide because he knew I was asking, so Richard, when are we going to get that stoplight? When are we going to get that stoplight? And he's like, it's coming, it's coming. If we had had a Vision Zero policy in our city before that time, I think that would have been thought of beforehand. We would have said, hey, we have a middle school over here, and we've got children at this side who need to get there. We have a shopping center now, but we have families that live in Gatehouse and Holiday House apartments that can't safely get over to that shopping center. So there's kind of a mental picture of what Vision Zero could have done for just that one area. And there's hundreds of these stories across the city as well. So this is why I would like to see Vision Zero passed in our city. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Windmiller. Any additional public comment?
Troy Balthazar, 3615 Chatham. Just two quick things. I'd like to speak in support of it. First of all, it's a great opportunity for us to work collaboratively and cohesively with the MoDOT, Missouri Department of Transportation. But also, beyond disability, I think it's what I've been impressed with is their approach is takes a universal approach in the sense that they're going to identify what drivers can do, what bicyclists can do, what people with disabilities can do to be seen. So it's not certainly not a initiative that comes from one perspective. It tends to be a fairly universal in its approach. And the thing that's encouraged me the most is it asks as much of each group as it benefits that group. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Balthazar. Husband, good evening.
Mary Huskman, 210 Ridgeway. I've spoken to past councils about the red light cameras, but it seems like once again I need to bring up the objections to these devices. The concerns I raise also apply to speed cameras. The council reconsidered the red light cameras in September of 2015 and decided not to reinstate them. This recent past, it's actually fairly recent, council decision should be respected. Virtually all of the Vision Zero suggestions have merit. But the, and it, you tell it took a lot of work. I read the report that was online. But the council tonight should exclude the red light and speed light camera recommendations. And here are some reasons why. Many Colombians believe that the controversial red light cameras and speed cameras are used not so much to improve safety, but to generate revenue. A cash cow which results in a lot of money going out of state to for-profit companies marketing these devices. These technologies are a good way to raise money, but it's not a good way to gain cooperation or avoid negative reactions from residents and guests. It's been shown that the red light camera devices cause more rear-end collisions. When red light cameras are operating at speed cameras, many drivers seeing the yellow or fearing running the red light, they quickly step on the brake. When a speeding person spots a speed camera, they often apply the brakes to avoid a ticket. The person behind them who doesn't see the required notification crashes into the rear of the car. Drivers are much more accepting of a ticket issued by an officer. As a Maryland Driver Alliance points out, the right to face your accuser in court and cross-examine witnesses is guaranteed by the Bill of Rights. Speed cameras and red light cameras deny you this right because the accuser is a machine. However, starting in 2009 with council approval, Columbia did sign a contract with GASCO, and they determined, the company determined where to place the five cameras in Columbia. Then pictures of violators driving were taken, and the police were required to sit at desks in the police department using computers to try to match the driver's photo with the driver's license photo. I think a lot of us in this room would say that our driver's license photo doesn't look like us. And many of the photos actually didn't match with any degree of certainty. So in August of 2013, with council approval, they agreed to take a picture only of the license plate and then ticket the owner of the car, whether that person was driving or not. Less than 2 months later, the Missouri Supreme Court declared this way of ticketing illegal. So if we reinstate the red light cameras and speed cameras, police officers would again be required to be at their desks trying to match up the camera pictures with driver's license photos. The council seems to recognize the need for more police on the street. So this desk confining job is certainly not the best use of police time. Do you know how long the yellow light is timed for? This is a very important part of what happens. Because when you shorten the yellow light, as was done in Springfield, Missouri, that was also under MoDOT, they did this and slashed in Springfield, Missouri, the yellow light by 1 second in 105 places that were to be regulated by MoDOT. So this can be done, and people are skeptical of that. With these technologies, timing is everything. So here's a solution that doesn't include cameras and should be considered. It has been found that if the yellow light at intersections is increased, this reduces the number of traffic violations and accidents. Also, if the red light in both directions is on for 2 seconds, that would prevent accidents. Columbia should ask MoDOT if we can try either or both of these solutions. This would convince skeptical Missourians like myself that our city isn't just interested in revenue, but actually wants the safety measures. So I have some articles here. I didn't have time to run them all off, but here's about alternative solutions to red light cameras. Study finds alternatives to cameras. Maryland argues against the speed cameras. This is a very interesting article out of Maryland. And red light cameras cause traffic jams.
Thank you.
I'll run these all off and
thank you,
sure
or you can leave them
you
with the city clerk and she can distribute them to
okay,
us.
Okay, great. Thanks
thank you very much. Any additional public comment?
Council members, Kathleen McKinney, 27 North Grace Lane. I am currently the executive director of Second Chance, which has nothing to do with traffic. But when I was in my master's program, getting my master's in public health, I was fortunate enough to work as an intern with PedNet. And during my internship, my job actually was to research Vision Zero to see if it would be a good fit for Columbia. So I can say with confidence that Vision Zero at first is a difficult philosophy to understand. If you try to look into the details too much, you can get bogged down in all of these options and looking at the different strategies and what might be best for our community and what might not be best. But the important thing about Vision Zero is that it is just a philosophy. It is data-driven. It allows you to pick which strategies will work best and fit best into our community, as far as down to the intersection level, as we've heard described tonight. Everything is considered with safety as a top priority. So I would urge everyone to vote in favor of Vision Zero, because I think no matter what we might disagree on, be it red light cameras or speed limits, and I'm sure you will hear some pushback from the community about any strategy that you might put forward. I think one thing we can all agree on is that safety should be our first consideration, especially when it comes to all forms of transportation. And Vision Zero is the policy that will ensure that.
Thank you. Thank you for your work on the project.
Good evening. I'm Michael Sefcik, 1404 Highlands Court. I am here representing the Board of Health, and we took this issue up at our November meeting and unanimously felt that the council should adopt the Vision Zero policy. I think we see it as a public health issue, and if you look at the number of people that are actually being injured and killed, it really is a public health issue. If we had restaurants where 50 or 60 people were becoming seriously ill each year, where six or seven people were dying because there was a problem with our restaurants, we would certainly jump right on that. The other thing that we recognized was that if you look at other towns that are similar to Columbia, other college towns, and I know Annette brought up Ann Arbor, which actually only had 26 deaths in the last 10 years, whereas we had 64. But if you look at other towns, for example, Lawrence, Kansas had 34, and College Station had 39. So if you actually average those other college towns together, that's 33 deaths, whereas Columbia has 64, which obviously we're not doing something right here. And we do see this as needless deaths, something that we can change, something that would actually enhance our community. One of the biggest problems is it's the whole culture. It's the sense that these are accidents and we can't do anything about it. These aren't accidents. These are actually traffic-related tragedies. And they don't have to happen, and we can see that by looking at those other towns. What we need to do is see this as a public health issue, and we need to not be afraid to fund it. I know one of the concepts we had come up with was the 1% for safety, and I could certainly understand how everybody's going to come in and want 1% for this and 1% for that, but we did it for art, and that really did enhance our community. And that is something, those are public buildings. These are public roads, and I think that there is some analogy there that you can take and say that, well, you know, we're doing it to make our buildings better, we're doing it to make our roads safer. And I don't think it necessarily means that it has to be done for everything. Certainly, as I talked, look at it as a public health, don't be afraid to fund it. These are people that are dying, and they don't need to die. And I'll say again, just to go to the water department, if we had water issues that where people were dying, we wouldn't just say, oh, six or seven die every year, who cares? We would fix it, even if it cost $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000. We really wouldn't worry about the expense. And I think that's the attitude we need to take, and I think Vision Zero will help us do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Any additional public comment? Mr. Auger, how are you this evening?
My name is Joe Alder. I live at 511 Parkade Boulevard. Over the years, I've volunteered well over 25,000 hours in public safety and injury prevention programs. The concept, the philosophy, the aspiration of Vision Zero really isn't anything new. Industry has adopted Six Sigma and ISO standards. Anesthesiologists in the commercial airline industry have adopted similar programs with just a lot of success. When we think about Columbia, we're always rated as a very, very good place to live. High quality of life and self-reported well-being, all the citizens. One of the things that we really need to attend to is the number of deaths, injuries, and the property damage that's a result of traffic crashes. And they are crashes, they're not accidents. They are preventable. I wasn't on the pedestrian task force, but I was a member of the engineering subcommittee. And I'd like to say a few things about some of the controversial issues surrounding this issue. As far as red light cameras and speed cameras go, this is a combination of engineering and enforcement, two things that are combined for enforcement. Like any type of human behavior, there's always a large number, 60, 70, 80% of people who comply. They abide by rules and regulations. They're good citizens. You know, they understand the concept of law and order, public tranquility, and getting along, and they abide by the regulations. Throughout the world, no matter what kind of political system we have, usually government builds the road systems and maintains it. And since that's the case, driving is a privilege in this country, not a right. It's a privilege, not a right. And since government builds the roads and has to deal with crashes, you know, if high costs are involved or there's injury or death, they have the responsibility, the moral obligation, to see what they can do to diminish that. There have been controversies, as we heard, around red light cameras, the fact that sometimes the yellow lights are twitched. Those are all refinements and details that can be worked out to make this an open, honest system that's effective. The 10, 20, or 5%, whatever number of offenders that repeatedly drive aggressively in speed and run the red lights, sooner or later, they wind up being the offenders that are involved in very deadly T-bone crashes. So that old concept of you do the crime, you do the time, or you pay the fine, or you pay for the consequences of the death, injury, and property damage that your behavior has incurred. That only makes sense. As far as the revenue from the fines at red light cameras, they don't begin to cover the cost of death and injury that occurs in many of these crashes. And we do have victim trust funds in this state, but just a small percentage of that money really compensates people. So that's a good idea. It's a very good idea. It just needs to be refined. And it has both a direct and a salutary effect. You know, it catches the worst offenders, and everybody kind of pays more attention and complies. Also, as far as cell phone use, emerging cognitive science shows that the idea of multitasking is a myth. Driving requires our full attention, and using your cell phone when you're driving is pure and simple. One form of distracted driving, and sooner or later we pay the consequences for that also.
Thank you, Mr. Strong. I encourage
you to all support all the aspects of the Vision Zero initiative in Columbia.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Frank Schmidt. I live at 505 Silverthorne Drive. I was a member of the Pedestrian Safety Task Force. You've all seen the details in our report, and I'm not going to belabor them. I just want to point out one important point, which I don't think anyone has brought up yet, which is that Vision Zero is motivated and defined and built on the concept of social equity. If you look at the people who are most at risk, the desks that caused our task force to be formed, it was an international student who was new to our community. It was someone who did not have access to transportation along Highway 63. The neighborhoods through which the fastest streets in Columbia are not places where professors live or places where surgeons live. They're places where people who are working class live. If we are going to build an equitable community, we must ensure that they are at no more risk than anyone else. People who don't drive, that doesn't mean you should take your life in your hands. The final point I'd point out is that it became clear to us on the task force that enforcement, education, and engineering go hand in hand, or perhaps, since there are three of them, hand in hand in hand. And anything we can do to reduce driver speed and distraction are going to be essential for this effort. And I thank you and urge you to adopt the report.
Thank you very, very much, Mr. Schmidt. Any additional public comment? Good evening, Mr. Clark.
My name is John Clark. I live at 403 North 9th Street. And so I encourage you to adopt not the report, the policy. The vision and the policy that's proposed will, I believe, allow the council to set the policy for the staff to follow by adjusting the relative importance in design, enforcement, implementation around our roads and raise the issue of safety much more than it is normally thought of. I particularly thank Ms. Triplett for talking about a core part of the safety aspect of this is the prevention part, and to a large extent that's design-based. That's going to be road design-based. One can say we have a policy, but for those of you who witnessed how long it took for us to get the staff to go along with the council reducing the residential speed limit from 30 miles an hour to 25, this core kind of notion, and all the engineering reasons and all the models about the study of the average this and the average that, by which in all those same engineering models, ASHTO and so forth, there's plenty of other guidance that would allow that. But this was just not the way we thought. And actually, I'm an advocate of the council providing direction of the council to the staff saying, this is what we value, as opposed to moving volumes of traffic, as opposed to convenience, being always kind of in the forefront as to the fault, et cetera. This moves safety to the forefront. So I'm encouraging you to adopt this, not just as a program, not just as but as a policy. I can remember the night that we adopted the policy that years ago that Columbia would be a bicycle, pedestrian, and wheelchair-friendly community. That very night, the council turned around and denied a variance for not building a sidewalk outside of a Waffle House. This is policy. And I remembered the council people saying, well, we don't have to do this. We've done this and this. We have each little instance. This is your chance to establish a policy, to establish, if not the top priority, at least an equal priority in safety in everything we're doing with our roads and so forth. What this amounts to is you're raising the level of service standard of our roads and streets to include a much higher level of safety for this area of our public infrastructure. And we will look to the staff to implement that and to be thinking about that as they look through all kinds of redesigns, all kinds of refits, planning, and so forth going forward. Thank you in advance for approving this policy.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Any additional public comment? Brown, how are you?
How are you? My name is Nate Brown. I live at 3601 West Broadway, and I was also a member of the Pedestrian Task Force on Pedestrian Safety. There are a lot of statistics, figures that are in the report, but what's not in the report are the near misses. The woman I nearly hit tonight on the way here to the council chamber at 9th and Cherry. The three women with shopping bags who was nearly hit at 9th and Broadway on Friday evening. The pedestrian I almost ran over at Hitton Broadway because this was in the summer because I couldn't see her because she was shorter than the planters. And that's just me behind the wheel. As a pedestrian, I make a daily trip across Elm Street at 9th to go to Lee Hills Hall. And that's dodging cars every time. Even though I have the right-of-way, I have the crosswalk. There's no lighting there. There's no signal, and the cars simply speed by. So those are the near misses that are not in the report. But I don't want to make it sound like I'm beating up on the drivers. There's a role for pedestrians to play, too, because I also spot them texting while walking or not paying attention where they're going, that sort of thing. But I think Vision Zero is, it's a mindset when we're planning streets, sidewalks, planters to decorate Broadway. Are we thinking of pedestrian safety, that sort of thing? So I would urge adoption of Vision Zero so we will have zero deaths by 2030.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Very much for your time.
Any further public comment? Any further public comment? Seeing none, is there any additional council discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Anyone opposed? Seeing none, is there any further discussion on the policy resolution as amended?
Just to reflect on public policy, I don't think endorsing a Vision Zero statement necessitates red light cameras. The local data has not shown that. If this is going to be a data-driven process, Columbia data didn't show safety gains as far as red light cameras. In fact, we've seen crash reductions after red light cameras were removed. I think it's a worthy policy idea. I think safety should be of very high consideration. And we should take that into account in all the decisions we make as council, and we should direct our staff to bring forward projects for engineering. We as a community should look very hard at how we fund public safety. The Mayor's Task Force on Community Violence recommended an increase in police officers to be able to do community policing adequately. I think we are going to need an increase in police officers to be able to do traffic control adequately. So. I think it's important that we do that. That beyond just passing this, it's going to be more than lip service, then it needs to inform how we make our decisions, still with a goodly respect for civil liberties.
Thank you. Mr. Scala?
Yeah, also in terms of reflecting on this, I think it's important, first of all, to put some of you folks at ease. I tend to support this idea of safety, no matter where it occurs. In this case, it's at intersections and so on. Public safety is one of the responsibilities of our community, City Council in particular, all public safety, not just intersections, but that's a subset of it, certainly. I think that my only reservations about that, I assume I can speak for just about everybody on the City Council when they say that, how could you oppose any such philosophy? I mean, the philosophy is of reducing these accidents, if you want to call them accidents, or tragedies, if you want to call them tragedies, is a good idea. I myself was hit, and my daughter and wife, at an intersection at 6th and Conley, coming home from a concert. I was thrown across the street. My daughter was injured, and so on and so forth. That was a car turning a corner after a stop sign at 5 or 8 miles an hour. I survived, and my daughter didn't have any lasting effects. So these are very important. These ideas about public safety are important. The problem that we have in this community, and it's not just this community, it's any community or anybody like this City Council, is we're always chasing resources with limited dollars. And we keep getting messages from folks who are in a position to tell us that is the city manager, that, for example, sales taxes, which we used to count on for 3% of our budgetary estimations, now are down to, the last estimation was 1%. We may not even make that because of online purchases and so on. And public safety goes, it's way beyond just the intersections. That would be part of it. And some of these ideas about the 1% and so on in along the lines of the percent for art, it's true that this may be just small pieces of this puzzle. But I'm a little reluctant, on two regards. I'm a little reluctant to go too far with increasing staff when we have broad public safety needs in terms of, Mr. Trapp mentioned this, the business about public safety in terms of police officers. We took six police officers and put them on community policing because that's what the community wanted, but we had to discontinue some of the traffic safety officers at the same time. Now, this may provide those collaborations to enhance that capacity and perhaps some other ones as well, and I'm comfortable enough with the language change here with the amendment to be able to tailor make this this intersection safety, this Vision Zero idea work for our community. But I think we need to take a very close look at what will work here and what may not work here, as some of these examples have pointed out. So I certainly, as a philosophy, am willing to take this subset of public safety in line with the broader context of public safety and try and emphasize that as a philosophy, and where necessary and where we can, fund it to the extent that we can. But I'm also mindful of some of the limitations that we have.
Pro Tem Ruffin.
Yes, a couple of things I wanted to just address. I wanted to say that I also participate in this task force, even though Councilman Thomas was the driving visionary. But as the public comments have come forth tonight, one of the things that we have witnessed is that it has broad based support from various entities within our community. And if we are to adopt Vision Zero as a policy and as a direction for the future, one of the things that's most important is that the city cannot successfully implement these ideas alone. It will require collaboration with the University of Missouri. It will require collaboration with Columbia Public Schools, because the ultimate goal is to ensure that the most vulnerable members of our community are always protected and safe. And the truth is that all of us are pedestrians at some point in the day. And we know that if we are able to protect those who are the most vulnerable, then those of us who are less vulnerable will also be protected. And so I certainly plan to endorse a Vision Zero, and I encourage my fellow council members to do the same.
Thank you. Ms. Nauzer.
Now, I would just like to add a couple of things. I certainly support the Vision Zero, and I have recently been in New York. And so if New York can reduce the fatalities and injuries from traffic accidents and pedestrian collision accidents, I think this is certainly well worth the effort. I just happened to see even a couple of public service announcements talking about left-hand turns and making people cognizant. That's one of the most dangerous times for pedestrian auto accidents, is when a car is making a left-hand turn. So I will certainly support this, but I probably will not be on the council when this is formally, when the mayor or the city manager comes back with his recommendations. So I would just like to add a couple of things. I certainly thank Ms. Sussman for coming up and talking about the red light cameras and the speed cameras. Everybody over the years knows my position on these types of issues. I was recently in a community that had speeding cameras. It was very interesting to see everybody on the highway slow down. They all knew where the speed cameras were. As soon as they passed the speed cameras, right back to speeding. And so, you know, that's always been one of my arguments. It works where they're placed, but it doesn't work necessarily as an entire system, because you'd have to have a red light camera, you'd have to have a speed camera at every interval throughout the area of which you're trying to control the speed. And so that brings me back to, you know, when the gentleman talked about texting while walking. Anecdotally, several years ago, I was picking up trash along 760 or Highway 63 in front of the Conley Walmart. Somebody from MoDOT saw me wearing earbuds as I was picking up trash, actually got off the roadway, came over, and asked me to please take out my earphones because it's so dangerous to be next to a roadway listening to music, not paying attention to traffic. Never thought of that. So as our police officers and other people in the community see somebody texting or doing something that could be potentially dangerous, there certainly isn't anything that could preclude you from saying, you know, maybe you should pay attention while you're walking, because I too have been caught myself texting and not paying attention as I start to walk across the street. Almost got hit by a bus once for not paying attention. So it certainly would behoove anybody, if you see something like that, to notify someone. So I will certainly support this. I would hope that existing laws will be enforced. So if somebody is carelessly driving because they're texting or talking on the phone and that impedes their ability to drive, that maybe our existing laws will be enforced for careless and imprudent driving rather than having to come up with a whole new set of laws when we have things already on the book that could just be enforced more often. So I will support this, but as you move forward, please look at all of the existing laws that could maybe enforce more, a little bit more community action with some of the police officers when they see somebody maybe walking and texting that they're not paying attention. And I will leave it at that. So fully support this, and thank you, Mr. Thomas and Mr. Ruffin, for your work as council members on this endeavor.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any further public comment? You need to close? Good?
Sure. I would actually just like to thank all the members of the task force and the non-members that participated in the subcommittees that we had. Thank you, Clyde, for mentioning that this is a partnership project. We need to work with the university. We need to work with public schools. We also need to work with MoDOT. And thanks very much, James Beattie, for coming out tonight, MoDOT representative on the task force. But I'm very encouraged that we can create an implementation plan that will not be terribly expensive, that will, as other cities have demonstrated, dramatically reduce the number and severity of these crashes, and will actually save us resources in the long run if we look in the long run and if we look at the big picture. Thanks for your support.
Thank you very much. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Council Bill 178-16, as amended. Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Thank you and congratulations on your removal from the consent agenda, B331-16, Madam Clerk.
Council Bill 331-16 is an ordinance authorizing a memorandum of understanding with the Missouri Department of Natural Resources relating to development of an integrated management plan for City of Columbia wastewater and stormwater systems, authorizing approval of an abatement order on consent with the Missouri Department of Natural Resources, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Thank you very much. Mr. Nose, you want to walk us through kind of where we are right here and kind of give us a snapshot and then see if there's any?
Sure. So there's two different pieces of this, and the council memo kind of describes it well, where one is a memorandum of understanding that kind of paints a framework of going forward. And the other is an abatement over order of consent, which is actually looking backwards to wet weather overflows and dry weather overflows. And in that, I think the critical pieces are, obviously, there is a fine associated, and the fine is $15,000. There's also an investigative cost reimbursement of $5,477.89. But that solves the backward-looking picture, and the forward-looking picture is really the integrated management plan, which is to devise a framework both between stormwater and sewer, and how to balance that out and get public input, and how to focus those dollars to achieve the best results as it goes forward. Those are the two different items, really, in themselves.
Thank you. Mr. Trapp, yeah, so, Mr. Thomas?
So I asked for this to be taken from consent. I'm just interested to know what the process will be going forward. Have we appointed this task force at this point?
I'll let Dave answer that a little bit better. About it's a really, it's like an engineering, more of a study.
Yeah, we had a council approved a HDR to develop this integrated management plan. I believe it was maybe last February, and they're in the process of doing that, and they've had three work sessions now to get public input on the community's priorities on environmental issues. So right now they're in the process of looking at alternatives. And once we get that, we'll probably have some more public meetings and then go ahead and develop the final plan and then bring it to council for consideration.
And do you see any interaction between the report of the Mayor's Infrastructure Task Force and HDR's work on this plan?
We will definitely look at any of the recommendations that the council adopts from the Mayor's Infrastructure Task Force as part of this plan.
Right. Thank you.
I just personally think this is a great opportunity. I would much rather, instead of paying $15,000 per incident over, and if you look at the six pages of incidents that we've had over the last 10 years, this is a great way to reinvest what would have been a punitive fine into a long-term solution that, you know, is going to be several million dollars into the future and really guarantees for taxpayers that we're going to have, you know, a plan moving forward to address the highest community needs in this area. So I think it's a positive for us. Any other questions, staff? Is there anyone from the public desire to be heard on B331-16? Seeing none, any additional questions of council? Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Council Bill 331-16, Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
And Madam Clerk, next order of business will be the consent agenda. Would you read the consent agenda and then read it a second time and ask for a roll call vote?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 325-16, 326-16, 327-16, 328-16, 329-16, 330-16, 332-16, 333-16, 334-16, 335-16, 336-16, 337-16, 338-16, and resolutions 179-16 and 180-16. Council.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. Bills 325-16, 326-16, 327-16, 328-16, 329-16, 330-16, 332-16, 333-16, 334-16, 335-16, 336-16, 337-16, 338-16, and resolutions 179-16 and 180-16. Mr. Trapp.
Yes on all bills and resolutions except for R-179-16, of which I abstain.
Mr. Scala.
Yes on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Thomas.
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer.
Yes on all bills and resolutions.
Ms. Peters.
Yes.
Mr. Treese.
Yes on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Ruffin.
Yes.
And next order of business will be, seeing no further new business, next order of business will be bills for introduction and first reading.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 339-16, 340-16, 341-16, 342-16, 343-16, 344-16, 345-16, 346-16, 347-16, 348-16, 349-16, and 350-16, first reading.
Thank you. And seeing no further business, reports. We have a report from the North 763 Community Improvement District Board of Directors for their appointment. I think those are both by appointment by the mayor with advice and consent of the council, or is it just by appointment? Or do we just accept the report?
I think it is with consent of the council.
That is correct.
I would move for the appointment of their two nominees with the consent of the council.
I would second.
Seeing any objection? Seeing none, have them be appointed. Have a report on the new utility.
Mayor, just while we're talking about the 763 Board of Directors, I noted Craig Vallone is still on there, and I know he's no longer employed at Burrell Behavioral Health, which is the member business, so they might want to look at their existing board members and make sure they all still qualify. I won't even bill by the hour for that astute observation.
I'd be happy walking that back.
We didn't vote on those. That was on a...
Recurring.
Not there. That's on an existing
one. On the existing one.
Correct.
Got it. So
I'm happy to reach out
to their council, because you had to reach out to him for these two appointments.
Yeah,
anyway.
I noticed they were coming up, so I can reach out regarding that as well.
Thank you. Good catch, Mr. Trapp. Next report on our new utility billing system. I will tell you, staff has been very responsive to constituent concerns over this issue, and it sounds like a lot of these issues are being resolved.
This is really a status report to give you guys an idea that, you know, of the dates and the times and the problems we've got going on. Certainly, we've been working through a lot of problems. We did change out the utility billing system. It's a system made by Advanced Utility Systems, which is a subdivision of Harris. It's called CIS Infinity, which is a software that gets used a lot to do this in our industry. So we actually started in February of 2015 to kind of start getting things set up and running, and actually went with an implementation date of August 29th of this year. So we've been here running with this for a while, and so this list really kind of goes over some of the data collection efforts we did to get to where we are with this. And then there's some enhancements that we kind of tried to detail in this status report of things that this program does better than what we did in the past. And then the rest of it kind of goes over some of the problems we've encountered and what the status of some of the solutions are that we're working through right now. So we think we're making really good headway on getting a stable solution in place, up and running. We certainly hope we're getting near the end of the problems, and we expect to. But we certainly are working with customers and doing what we can to make everything right that comes out that maybe not be exactly what we want out of this. So there is a lot of information in this. If there's any questions I can answer right now, I will. If there's stuff I need to take back and bring you some information back, I will certainly do that too.
Any questions or comments, Director Johnson?
Actually, I'll just say I thought it was a really good report and really laid out systematically the different issues that had been encountered and gave good explanations for each one. I appreciated that.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that we're going to be able to make amends for the extended building cycle or the increased fees. I had thought it kind of evened out because, you know, people talked about the long billing cycle. No one talked about the short billing cycle where everyone dropped a tier. We got zero complaints on, hey, my electric bill was too low. You've put me into a lower tier. You know, people quickly noticed when it went the other way around. That just showed, I mean, a lot of this should behoove us as we make decisions about things that impact rates, either indirectly or directly. How many people live paycheck to paycheck? How many people budget their utility payments based upon their shutoff notice, and how little room for error many of our constituents have. I know probably most of our lives are not organized in that fashion, but we need to take that into account, you know. So it was a good report. And it's been a tough process. I think it was the changeover with the phones plus the utility, you know, changeovers that piled onto each other. So
yeah, nothing's ever easy. And I believe on that extended billing cycle thing, I believe we went through and we recalculated the impacts to the customers, and we have refunded or rebated those back to the customers. I believe we're done with that process now.
I agree, Mr. Trapp. I dealt with several unhappy constituents over that, and it was a good reminder, you know, that, you know, they were paycheck to paycheck. The bill came the day after it had been ordered. They got a $35 overdraft, and that $35 mm-hmm. meant, you know, 2 weeks of gas. It meant Christmas presents. It meant a lot, and it was humbling to be reminded of that. So a good reminder, and thanks for the progress we're making there. Anyone, Mr.
Yeah, just a comment. It's the same kind of thing. I mean, I was reminded of it when the billing cycle changed, and there was an automatic payment that came out of my account. I didn't have to live from time to time or from day to day, and I can appreciate how somebody who had not anticipated that does, and they don't always get those funds in. But what I do really appreciate now on top of the report, which I think was top-notch, is this capacity to go back and resolve some of these issues. It's not that change is always hard, any kind of change. And there are always unanticipated consequences, I think, too. And as long as we could assure folks that we would get this straightened out and then follow up with straightening it out, I think was a step in the right direction. You can never anticipate some of these things, but I appreciate the work that you've done on it and the resolution that was forthcoming.
I think one of the benefits that I think we see out of this, you know, certainly there's some pain to have to change things, is there's a lot more information on the bill these days. So if people are willing to take the time to figure out how they can reduce or limit their exposure to these expenses, I think we're trying to provide them more tools to do exactly that, which I think is the intent of the rate structure we have, is we want people to be incentivized to manage their consumption. So I think we're providing them with more information to do exactly that.
Thank you. Next report will be 96-16, our annual report of volunteer service to the city.
Hi, I'm Lee Kotwitz. I'm the Neighborhood Services Manager for the city. And each year we provide a report to council about the efforts of volunteers that support the city. And I've got some great news that this last year our volunteer hours were up by about 2% from the previous year. Volunteers shared with the city over 35,000 hours of service. And through that service, they supported 12 different city departments. Parks and Recreation is the department that gets the most volunteer service, followed by our Community Development Department and City Utilities. So we're very pleased with the service that our volunteers provide. And we say thank you to all those folks that share their time to make our city a better place. And also want to say thanks to the city staff that make all that work possible. And I'm happy to take any questions.
It's it really is great to see all those people that pitch in to really make Columbia, I mean, to own a piece of Columbia in that way, and that they feel so passionate to contribute their time in that effort. So thanks for organizing that. That's no small task either, to coordinate volunteers and make sure they're deployed timely and efficiently. So thank you. Any other questions?
No, I think that's why this place works. And it's that's the glue that makes this all happen. I mean, it's volunteer hours are essential for a community like this. And I appreciate all the work that you've done and the recognition, which is overdue to a lot of these folks that are putting in lots of hours.
Mr. Trapp?
I appreciate the where we compare to last year. That was some information that I asked at last year's report. This bucks the national trend of volunteerism going down. So the fact that we're able to turn the corner on that, I think, speaks volumes to the hard work we do. And I ran a nonprofit, and wrangling volunteers is a tough gig, and it often takes more labor than you get out of it. But I don't see that happening. I look like we get real value out of our volunteers, and a lot of things work well in the city. The pedestrian task force folks was a great example of that. So well done.
Thank you. Final report was 97-16, transfer of funds. Was there any issue or questions on that? We consider that report adopted. Any final comments of question or comments by the public? Ms. Price.
I forgot to ask you all. I brought about 6570 of our little handouts to take the online survey for the bus system evaluation. If each of you would take two or three of them and pass them out, we will get rid of all of them.
That's great. If you leave those with the city clerk, that'd be fine. Any additional comments? Thank you very much, Ms. Price. Any additional comments?
My name's Laura Mitchell, 1103 Jean Ray Drive. I'm one of the members of Race Matters Friends, and I forgot to submit my name for public comment in time to be on the early agenda. So I'm glad to have a minute to talk with you tonight. You know, members of our committee come before you consistently since 2015 over and over again talking about fairness in traffic stops. I hope you'll let me go over for a minute. And about other issues in policing. I thought tonight that I would just briefly talk about something that surprised me when I first went to my first meeting about police activities, and that was that of all the calls to the call center, something more than half of them at some point in time were calls for thefts from Walmart. And that has been changed so that police don't go out if the cost of the item stolen was less than $50, and so that's been reduced. So the city addressed that issue. It was also determined that the police wouldn't go to every traffic accident unless there was an injury, and that reduced the number of police hours going to that. So we understand, it's clear that we don't have a large enough police force for the size of the city. The population's grown over 63 square miles, which is just a huge expanse. And we have maybe 16 or a few more police officers on duty at any given time. Some of them are assigned to those special districts, but many of them are covering just this huge swath. I decided to do a quick tally of yesterday's calls into the call center. It's kind of fun. It reminds you all the things police officers have to do. There were about 60 calls, and there's trespassing, larceny, suspicious person, suspicious vehicle, traffic hazard, and then two stalled vehicles, which I think was weather-related. But of those 60 calls, 20 of them were to security alarms. And that's the thing I wanted to address a little bit. I know that the city has a policy that the first two times that the police are called out on an alarm, they're not charged. After that, it's $100 per. But I did some reading, and the Urban Institute, which you may be aware of, they did a report in 2013, I think, about, you know, what a problem this is and what different cities have done to solve it. And I'd encourage you to look at this, because They talk about much bigger cities than ours, so Los Angeles, Seattle, someplace over by D.C. They instituted, you know, every person who had an alarm had to be registered, and then there were progressive fines, because if you look at the things that can make an alarm go off, it's crazy. And I wonder if people are enough financially motivated to resolve those problems. The bigger cities created this whole four-person staffed thing, and they brought in a lot of revenue, which covered the fact that they had to staff it. And they also pointed out in the report that businesses were afraid, specifically businesses, that response times would be worse, but they actually got better because it kind of cut it all to shaft. But at the very end, Salt Lake City, Utah, they decided that they did a penalty system like we have, but then finally they decided that the alarm company should have their own guard who should go out first. And data all around the country says about 2% of the alarms that go off are a true burglary. Do you know that? So I just wanted to put that out there as ways that the city can. The title of their report is How You Can Have Better and More Affordable Policing with the Same Funds, because you're not doing so much of that. I'm sure you understand what I'm trying to get at. And we really do believe that that would free up more officers for kind of community work, community-focused work, where people would know individuals in their community. And so rather than doing the kind of saturation where they have to stop everybody, would kind of get a feel for who is just there on business. Thanks.
Great. Thank you for the suggestion. Mm-hmm. Any further comments from the public? Mr. Maslowski.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Thank you. My name is John Maslowski, and I work with Renovate America in the Missouri Clean Energy District and live in KCMO. Thank you, Councilman Scala, for inviting me here to speak this evening. If I may I pass out a handout for the council's reference? Thank you. I represent the private-public partnership between Renovate America and the Missouri Clean Energy District, which is a political subdivision of the state of Missouri. We partner with local governments and local contractors to provide affordable and accessible financing for energy-efficient improvements in the community, thereby increasing the value of the local housing stock. Specifically, the district provides authority for PACE financing, or property-assessed clean energy. PACE is a single-purpose financing tool for improvements to residential and commercial property. In particular, products fixed to the property and approved by the Missouri Department of Energy and other regulatory bodies, including energy-efficient air conditioning, insulated doors and windows, and roofs. The name of our PACE financing program is HERO, a state-of-the-art technology and finance platform for property owners to access PACE financing. The HERO program is the leading residential PACE financing platform in the country and is operated by Renovate America. The HERO program offers long-term fixed-rate financing over the useful life of the product, up to 20 years in Missouri, and payable through your annual property tax bill. In addition, the HERO program offers unmatched consumer protections in the home improvement industry, offering support before, during, and after the project. We are active currently in 3 states, including Missouri. We have over 450 government partners where HERO is being offered, and 100% of them remain partners after 5 years, something that we are extremely proud of. The Missouri Clean Energy District currently has 80 cities and counties as member communities, including the city of Kansas City, where we began offering HERO in September, and in the first 3 months have already invested $1.4 million into the local housing stock, partnering with over 80 local contractors. Since November, we have also begun offering HERO in the St. Louis metro area. Our goal is to partner with the City of Columbia to help the city and its property owners achieve its job creation goals, its economic development goals, and your environmental goals. Over the next 5 years in Missouri, we project abating more than 1.5 million tons of emissions and improving over 35,000 homes, while creating 6,000 local contractor jobs with more than $1 billion economic impact in Missouri. By the City of Columbia passing an ordinance to join the Missouri Clean Energy District without any membership cost, liability, or administrative burden to your municipality or cost to taxpayers, your city authorizes PACE financing in the community through local contractors, facilitating economic development, improved housing stock, local job creation, and environmental benefits throughout the community. I would welcome the opportunity to present more formally in the new year on an ordinance to join the Missouri Clean Energy District. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, and for your travel down here and for sticking around for the end of the meeting. Appreciate it. Mr. Scallon, do you have any questions?
Yeah, just a note, too. There is a report that was requested from the staff. We probably will compile that. We probably will invite you again to come comment on that when we take up this issue, probably after the first of the year. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Any further public comment?
Council people, my name is Joe Walder. I would just like to expand on some of the excellent comments that were made at the hearing on the Vision Zero issue tonight. I think it was very good because we had a wide array, very diverse comments from all the people that commented. I was very impressed with the comment about social equity, because the fact is that people that are in the lower end of the social economic spectrum in our city, often they don't have choices. There's an acronym, ATED, Access to Exchange Disadvantage, which generally means people that don't have a choice of more than one mode of transport, which in most cases means they don't have a car, so they're stuck with riding a bus, walking, or rolling in their wheelchair. And if you look at some of the victims of some of the crashes that we've had, injuries and fatalities, often because people are forced to use a certain mode, that causes them to use a higher risk mode. They are more vulnerable. So as we work in our town to make Columbia a more equitable place socially, this is certainly a key element of that. I also like Clyde's comment about the comment regarding the near misses. Studying near misses was the key to the success of the commercial airlines industry in their Vision Zero program to really cut down on the fatal crashes. There were just literally thousands of near misses, and they studied behavior. They studied cockpit design. They studied the leadership aspects of the pilot and the co-pilot. They studied all this, and they reverse engineered, went back through all the data, all the crash reports, to really try to figure out what was wrong. There was somewhat of a scandal in the NTSB because many of their reports, their final reports, just said pilot error or driver error. In other words, blaming it all on the operator. And that's what the media grabbed and ran with. If you read a little further, often there were many other factors involving engineering or failure with the mechanics. And the pilot was just overwhelmed at some point due to lack of training or ability to respond. So it's complicated. It's really complicated. It's not just engineering. It's not just education. It's not just enforcement. It takes all three. And there's also a fourth E called encouragement, which kind of ties together all the other three. When we think about driving, for example, we've abandoned driver education. That's something we just don't do anymore. And what could be more critical to teenagers getting to their 21st birthday and staying alive? Part of their education should be driver education. Also, I think we all need to be active and proactive citizens. And Councilwoman Nauser, I liked your comment about somebody who approached you, went out of their way to point something out to you, and it changed the way you think of, felt about things. And I think we all need to take that personal responsibility. If we see something, mention it to them. Mention how dangerous it might be to ride without a helmet, bicycle, or to be on your cell phone when you're crossing College Avenue. And so it really gets down to all of us as individuals to be active citizens that care about protecting all the rest of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Alder. Any further public comment? Mr. Eugene Elkin.
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Range Line. I'd like to piggyback on the back of the gentleman previous to me. As I've kept my winter clothes on this evening, I've come in late. I'm hearing bits and pieces about the visioning. Hope to hear more newspaper, television, exactly what you all did pass this evening, because there was a representative in our past named Judy Baker, and she has been trying to work on the issue of texting and talking, and it's possibility that you may have stepped up and began the first step in the state of Missouri, because I've known it forever, ever since the get-go on that very dangerous situation. Many a wreck is caused by the telephone. Personal thank you to Mr. Thomas for having kicked off the homeless shelter a week early this time. For the city manager, I do not know where you come into this part of the story, but this past Friday, where we have the tremendous snowstorm or ice, I am on the 63 I-70 interchange. It takes me anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour to go from Wendy's, which is the north, to break time, which is the south of the intersection. To ironically meet someone coming out of Walmart, it took them 1 hour to get to the same break time. So in our future, I noticed that police officers came out and began to direct traffic on 63 and 70 by foot. Maybe someone needs to keep that in mind. Do we need officers on foot to clean up what man has invented that can no longer function by way of the signals? Thank you very much. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Any further public comment? So let me just chime in on that, and let me just convey my appreciation and respect to city staff and especially our first responders, including just not just our police and firefighters, but the snowplow and salt truck operators this weekend. Steve Sapp put together some metrics on this weekend, and the city started pre-treating roads Friday afternoon. They were prepared to start at 1. Once that freezing mist started, they started at 11 o'clock. Quickly, we had 25 salt trucks out working around the clock and with mandatory safety breaks every 12 hours. A 25 salt trucks takes 50 drivers, and we had not just our operators, we had mechanics, we had supervisors driving those trucks all day Friday night, all day Saturday night. Sunday morning we had 7 drivers come in. That quickly escalated to 20, and they quickly got all the high traffic streets and almost all of the residential neighborhoods done. We went through 1,440 tons of salt, which was about 28% of our annual salt budget for the winter weather episode, and I just thought the city's response was fantastic. I went out and visited with some first responders, and there were firefighters there was no firefighter in a station on Friday night. They were dealing with over 200 wrecks and accidents, and just doing a great job and moving on, and you know, they double parked in front of Hy-Vee to run in and get a slice of pizza and went right back out and started assisting other people. And it was a tremendous city response with a lot of cooperation with CPS and Boone County and MoDOT. And I just want to say thank you. So, any additional comments from council?
Mr. Nauzer? You said.
Yep.
I just had a couple of things before the evening is over. I've noticed out on Scott Boulevard that there's been several speed trailers. So I would be curious to know what the data is on that, especially near the new elementary school, just because incidentally I go that way every morning to work. And so I've noticed that a lot of people do not slow down at the school crossing sign. And so I don't know, going back to the Vision Zero policy that we just approved tonight, what there might be in that area to slow down traffic if we need some speed calming measures. When it's 20 degrees outside, it's not necessarily a big problem, but when it's spring and there's more children walking to school, especially from the neighborhoods, new neighborhoods across the street, if people aren't slowing down, especially at that school crossing, crosswalk, that could certainly be a tragedy waiting to happen. So I would be curious again to see that traffic data and to see if if there are problems with consistent speeding, what solutions we might have to remedy that. And I would also like to know, since my time is dwindling and we're approaching 2017, what the progress is on the Henderson Branch negotiations, if there's any kind of timeline, and what staff has done so far and what the outlook is on that issue, and maybe have a report on that the second meeting of January to let all of us on council know and the community know on that. Anybody knows me, one of the stories from my first go-around at council, I ended up with a dog from the Humane Society. So dogs and animal welfare are certainly something very close to my heart. And so I'm sure all council members over the past week have received many emails from people all across the globe regarding our sister city in South Korea and the horrendous practice of dog farming and eating dogs. And so since we have a sister city in South Korea, I think that practice, while some may approve that's a cultural issue, I don't think that's a practice that the people of our community would associate with or condone. And now I did have someone respond back to me. I can't remember which country it was, but they did state that our sister city was taking proactive measures to ban that practice of dog farming for meat. So I would like staff to look into exactly what has transpired, if that in fact is the case, that if our sister city is taking measures to ban that and assist people who engage in that activity to help them learn a new trade, different trade in the farming industry rather than raising dogs to eat. That would certainly be, I think, good for our community to reach out to our sister city in South Korea and ask for clarification of what the policy is and what they're doing to change that policy and make that be known. Because, I don't think that is something our citizens would necessarily approve of from any city when we want to call our sister city. So I will leave it at that and then wish our community a happy holiday and a Merry Christmas. And see you back in 2017.
Mr. Ruffin.
Well, I have a happier announcement. tomorrow afternoon at the Blind Boone home, there's a special event. We will honor a member of our community. His name is Walter Rowley. He is 97 years old. Yeah, he attended Douglas High School during the 1930s and dropped out of school to enter into the war. He became a decorated World War II veteran, and his daughter has asked us to recognize him by providing an honorary high school diploma. And as soon as the information was released, the Columbia Public Schools rose to the challenge immediately. The City of Columbia has also joined in the celebration by drafting a proclamation for Mr. Rowley, and we will honor him tomorrow at the Boone House. And this is the first community event that will be held at the Boone House since the dedication, so it's great. That's why the house was restored, because that was his request, that he wanted this to happen at the Boone House. And so we will be there tomorrow afternoon to honor Mr. Rowley.
Can you tell us what time?
4:30.
Thank you.
Mr.
Scala. Yeah, just a couple of things. I think Ms. Nauser and I probably served in the council long enough that we sort of read each other's minds with this osmosis. But one of the issues that not the dog issue, but I've gotten lots of emails about that. But with regard to the Henderson branch, I think that is something that it would be nice to know after the action that we took where the status of those negotiations are or where we are with that. Because I had said before that I think since it was a public referendum that we certainly are obligated to consider the spending of the original amount, the $2.1 million, and negotiate for some of the rest of this beyond the urban service area for this vaunted public-private partnership, which really needs to become a partnership. So I'd appreciate that information as well. The other thing I had is rather parochial, actually, everybody has a story about where they were and how they got home and how long it took and whatever. I was at a meeting on Saturday in the Stevens Lake Park area, and And it took me about 3 hours to get home. I was lucky. My wife took her about 5 or 6 hours. And with respect to as hard as everybody was working to try and get chemicals and everything on the street, it was also true that there were an enormous amount of either stalled vehicles or vehicles that could not move, and they couldn't even treat the streets underneath some of these. So it was a very difficult proposition. But I made it back safely anyway. But on the way to making it back safely, I was going south on 63 near Stevens Lake Park, and the left turn lane onto Broadway going east is it's not too much an exaggeration to suggest that it really is a washboard. And with the ice on top of it being a washboard, it was a very dangerous situation. And I just, if we can get a little bit of a focus on that left turn lane as it goes on, and it's a very busy intersection on top of everything else, that would be very much appreciated. And it is two left, but it's the left. The innermost one is the one that really is needs some sort of attention or resurfacing. It's not just a pothole. It really is a buckling of the pavement, and it's pretty dangerous. So, and then just to wish the folks that are watching and the folks that are still in the chamber a very Merry Christmas and a healthy and happy New Year to all of you. We won't meet till the next time. I think it'll be after the first of the year. So Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
Thomas.
I just wanted to endorse what you said, Brian, about the city services response to the ice storm. I had a few calls, concerns about snow and ice clearance, and then I had a couple that called back again to say, they came, how great. We really appreciate the attention. So, yep. Nice job.
Thank you. Ms. Peters, anything? I move
nothing
we adjourn.
To add. No.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. We'll see you in January.
Thank you.